It is Saturday, January 1st, 2011, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, Geek News, and the second half, your questions and comments about technology. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com. It's time now for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. In the second half of the show, we'll be inviting you to join the conversation. You can ask us anything you'd like today. The phone number is 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877, about a half an hour. Of course, you can. I'll give that contact information again when I invite your participation. If you're a podcast listener and feel like you can never call in, of course, we do stream this live. So as long as you're on the Central Coast of California or can figure out the Pacific Daylight Time, you can listen to us online on Saturdays at 10. Or, of course, listen to the podcast and email us questions if you'd like. This morning, the geeks are Miles Elam. He's a political junkie and programmer. Good morning, Miles.
Good morning.
And Mr. Benjamin Jaffe. Ben is a freelance media guy and sometimes Stanford instructor. Good morning, Ben.
Morning. How's it going?
Good, good. Well, I would say that I think the biggest thing about today is that it's a new year.
Yes, indeed.
Has anybody figured out the whole 1-1-1-1-1-1 date in a binary form?
Well, that's the thing, though. If it's four ones, then yeah.
That's easy.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're going beyond that.
Well, I mean,
it depends on how you have the date configured.
Well,
but
you got
for the first time, or not necessarily the first time, but it's a nice time where the certain forms of the ISO date, where the year comes first, the European dating system, where the dates come first, and or rather everyone except the U.S. way of dating things, and then the U.S. way of month, day, year, we all can agree. We can all come together in universal harmony.
That's right.
That'd be too easy. That'd be way too easy. We have to have this sent.
Of course, tomorrow the revolution begins.
How do you guys like to date things? Like when you write down a date, how do you do it?
How do I like doing it?
Yeah,
or how do I?
How do you specifically like when you sign a document and then you date it, or you write a check and there's a blank field date spec? What order do you do it in?
I usually do the 3-letter month abbreviation, then the day, then a 4-digit year. Ever since the year 2000, like,
yeah.
It doesn't matter that at this point now, it doesn't matter if you use 2 digits because it's going to be another, you
right.
know, 89 years before we have to worry about it again.
Yeah, but Miles and I worked at the same company when we went through the 2000, didn't we? Or no, I guess no, I was worked before. No, sorry. We joined forces after that. But going through that process as a programmer was a very edifying experience. I now focus a lot whenever I write down a date on how it will be perceived.
Yeah.
For all of eternity.
Yeah. Yeah, when I'm writing a check, like, yeah. Where it so doesn't matter. I still am like, no, I have to do 4-digit date. I have to.
I do the same thing, except I would really prefer that everyone start with the year, then do the month, then the day, because things alphabetize nicely.
Yes,
Ben,
I totally
Ben,
agree.
I love you, Ben.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I'm so in lockstep with you. I think it always should start with a year. That's
yeah.
the most
well,
specific.
The biggest going yeah, to the smallest. We
exactly.
do that for hours, minutes, seconds.
Might as well do it for
you know, write things out
all
to
right.
milliseconds.
Cool.
And yeah, and sorting in a database or sorting for a file is just so much easier.
All the photographs I import in.
And you know,
I have it done that way. And when I sort the photographs, it's easy. You know when it was taken.
Because people don't do this, and because people don't put leading zeros on file names when they think they might get past 10, for example.
God kills a kitten.
Exactly. The way operating systems sort things is just weird, you know? Like, it just can't be consistent because, you know, Apple will say, oh, well, you know, people have their photos that start at 1, go to 9, and then they go to 1, 0, so we'll put that after. But then, so I never know the way the operating system is going to sort my files, which is really frustrating because it should be simple.
Is this why you didn't get any sleep last night?
Yeah, exactly. Had nothing to do with, I don't know, the heralding in a new year.
All right.
Did anyone watch the ball drop?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I didn't watch it, but I watched it last year. This is pretty much the same thing, right? Talking about
yeah,
why?
Pretty much.
What happened this year? Was it different?
I just
did
found
it go up instead.
No, I just found a really interesting article, which I'll post on geekspeak.org, and it'll be up there after the show. But it just had a couple interesting facts, technical facts about the ball. So back in 1907 was when we first started dropping balls. And I assume at no point were we actually really dropping balls. We were, you know, controlledly lowering them slowly. But
lowering a multi-ton,
yeah,
hundreds or thousands of LEDs.
The first one was like, I think it was 400 pounds or something. 400 pounds. And then it was 700 pounds. And it was more than that. And now it's 6 tons. Why? I don't know. That's just... I don't know. I think with LED technology,
wait,
we could...
6 tons? That thing is 6 tons?
It's just 25 pounds under 6 tons. I don't know.
Well, it's thousands
it's
of crystal. LEDs.
It's uh-huh. a lot of crystal.
It's the sparkly aspect to it. It's the electronics going to it. And it's also much bigger than the original one.
Uh-huh. They've got...
To be seen by a greater population throughout all of Times Square.
2,700 okay. little crystal triangles that cover the ball, and it's got like 33,000 LEDs on it. I mean, and I'll bet they're all wired up, you know, like somewhat independently because
they do
all kinds
of every year?
Color things. No, they don't. They don't. There have only been 7 that they've made. Okay. But the first one, see, I'm really interested in the first one because it says in the article, it says originally the ball tied to the maritime tradition of lighthouses with a new invention of electricity to show the latest technology to the world. So that was kind of why they started this tradition. And I don't know why we do it now, aside from just that we always have. But
it always upsets me they don't actually drop it, that it goes down on some device.
Yeah, I kind of want to see
it.
I'd
much rather see the
splatter.
Second half it would take for it to hit the ground.
Yeah, exactly. Get some physics in there, make it hit
right
at the
perfect.
But 100, a full 100 25 watt bulbs in 1907, and now it's just this crazy,
cool,
wacky computer controlled technology thing. And
very geeky of you.
It used
Thank
to be made of iron and wood, but now it's, I don't know what it's made of now. Crystal, I guess.
Thanks,
but
Ben.
Anyway, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. So you saw it, not live, but you
I
saw
did
it.
Not.
Oh, okay.
I was just asking you guys if you'd seen it.
Miles,
I wasn't going to say that I didn't see it. But.
Miles, can you tell us about a new nonprofit?
It's called Code for America. This is, you know, Coders of the World Unite. Now, this is basically for all those folks who are having some trouble finding a job, or if you're not satisfied with your existing job. These are programmers that I'm speaking to, usually web developers. There is a nonprofit, Code for America, that is pushing for civic-minded geeks.
Okay.
To make an application to them, and they will place you in a city, similar to the idea behind Teach for America.
Okay.
Where they would place teachers around the country where they are needed most. And the idea is that you'd be working with municipalities, municipal government, and either giving them a crash course on technology or helping to code up their workplace to increase efficiency.
Oh, neat.
To increase, you know, better streamline workflow, mm-hmm. To make government more transparent, make it, you know, more efficient.
So this is a nonprofit that organizes people to do this. So I'm assuming there's also the second side where small municipalities can apply and say, we need geeks.
Yes.
I like it. I would hope that you, as a programmer, submitting yourself to this, they wouldn't assign you to a city that's far away.
Well, this is the first year of the program.
Okay,
2011. So this is
first
you can get
program.
In. Yeah, you can get in the at the front door or at the bottom floor. 20 fellows were selected from 362 applicants to work on projects in 4 different cities. So far, it's Boston, Philadelphia, Seattle, and Washington, D.C. So large cities, mm-hmm. that could absolutely use some
You would
help.
Think that they'd already have a relatively high tech group.
Okay, you may, but at the same time, there's existing infrastructure. There's, yeah. I mean, there's also a lot of cutbacks in government spending and worker salaries, people having to go on furlough.
Doing this kind of job... I always seem to fall into this position when I'm working at companies, where I'm looking at the way the business is run and trying to improve it. I think it's one of the side effects of being a geek. You try to solve the problems that even if they don't exist or mm-hmm. other people don't know they exist. And I had that job, specifically I had that job at UCS when it first started, really looking at business flow and practices and trying to improve it. And it is it's a good task. It's a fun thing to do because you can realize, wait a second, there's two different groups here using a content management system. Let's make one content management system. You know, that right. kind of simplicity in thought, but it really takes somebody to do it.
And it also, excuse me, New Year's, yes.
Stay up late last night.
It also encourages people to think up new ideas to propose them so that people can evaluate all the different options, yeah. go out there and bring in those new ideas. Just because when you're staring at a problem for too long, if you're in that problem for too long, you forget the problems in many ways.
I know what you mean. All right, well, thank you. Code for America is the new nonprofit. Thank you, Miles, for that update. Ben, let's go back and talk about old computer games.
Yeah, so did you guys ever play Frogger? That's a stupid question. You're geeks. Of course you've played Frogger. And probably
Frogger,
most people have played Frogger. If you haven't played Frogger, it's a game where you're a frog and you jump from on the road from row to row, and you would try to avoid getting hit by the cars, and you jump onto the logs that are going down the river. Anyone remember Seinfeld? They had an episode where they played like a real life version of Frogger, and
sure.
occasionally you hear news stories about people, you know, emulating the game in real life. Well, another guy did it, and apparently he didn't get the memo that you're supposed to warn the drivers that you're doing it before. Yeah. So a man playing real-life Frogger in South Carolina got hit by an SUV. And it seems he's okay. He's stable. But I just thought this was
actually, he's not okay.
He's
true. He's an idiot.
That's true.
But go on.
Well, and that SUV driver is now traumatized.
Yeah.
It's really bad to hit someone. And
yeah. And not to, do they get hurt, the SUV driver?
I don't. Nothing
they're
in the
they're
article
probably
about it.
Safe. I mean,
yeah. They probably have a dent on their car, but So the guy's in stable condition and everything. It seems in the hospital, but he's 23, and apparently, according to the police, they said the man yelled "go" and darted into oncoming traffic in a 4-lane highway.
Oh.
It's not like, you know, he was crossing.
You got to work your way up to that level.
I know. I don't know. It's just really. a bad idea, and I don't know if there was a river nearby.
Ben, he was only 23, and when you're 23, you're invulnerable, so there is that.
I don't know if there was a river with a logging company nearby, you know, he's planning to move on to that. I don't know. Anyway, so but the good news is that the driver, no charges are expected against the driver because the guy was trying to play Frogger. That's just a bad idea.
This
reminds me
of Frogger.
It actually reminds me of the movie Bowfinger, you know, running across multiple lanes of a freeway.
Movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But that's,
but
yeah,
that
that's exactly what you're talking about. It's like running forward, stopping for a second, waiting for the car to pass by, run forward.
Or Gattaca. I don't know. A million movies.
Thank you, Ben, for that real life Frogger. Sad story.
Oh, my God. I wish we didn't have to cover these things, but, you know, that's something Al would cover, but he's not here.
Let's talk about your European story. I don't know, Paris or something.
Nice transition. Paris is looking to ban gas-guzzling cars. And yes, that means SUVs.
So you can't play Frogger there.
Sorry. Well, but you couldn't be hit by an SUV there.
No, actually, in Europe, whenever I've gone, I've noticed that you have these small roads and people are not driving slower.
Oof.
They are not.
Yeah. So... Yes, SUVs, how do you define a gas guzzler? Isn't a big truck or also a
it's,
gas guzzler?
It's talking about the amount of CO2 emissions. So it's vehicles that emit more than a certain amount of CO2 per kilometer,
mm-hmm.
Which oftentimes is measured by the mileage.
Right.
But
and seating capacity.
But it's not exactly accurate, but sure. I mean that's... Well, it's by mileage is... not necessarily by seating capacity, though.
Well, it should be. I mean, a bus is going to be horrible gas mileage. But when you think about how many people it carries, then it's good gas mileage.
Right. Well, I think of the Prius and cars like that. The Prius specifically was made not to be fuel efficient,
mm-hmm.
but rather to be emissions efficient.
Right. True.
And the fuel efficiency just came along for the ride. We covered this when we had that
no
Prius engineer.
So So basically, Paris is going to say, if you drive these gas guzzlers, you can't come into the central. The
city limits, yeah.
Really?
Or, I'm sorry, yeah, the central.
Can you buy a special pass that gets you to come in?
That I don't know, but it was saying...
the Franks.
It was comparing it as a more extreme version of London's congestion charging scheme, which levies a fee of approximately £10, which is about
£15.50. You pay to bring your car in the city.
To enter the central city area.
Yeah, I remember that. I think we covered that on Geekspeed, too. Okay, well, thank you very much. So, city's becoming less and less friendly to gas guzzlers. Ben, let's do something, I don't know, some space news. Shall we?
Yes. So I just want to cover this one picture.
Miles handled France. Now you're doing space. Miles, you're going to have to cover multi-universe in just a minute, okay? Go on, Ben.
All right. Wow. Escalating.
I can do that, actually.
Okay, good.
We don't know all of our news stories before the show or anything. It's fine. No. I just want to cover this one picture of Saturn, which is just really, really cool. I mean, you know, occasionally I'll do this and just cover a single picture in a news story, but this thing's got so many cool things with it, elements to it. So there's a really great post on Bad Astronomy, which is Phil Plait's astronomy blog, and he's also covering this picture where there's this enormous storm on Saturn. It kind of looks like there's this big huge splotch, which is half the size of Earth, so it's tremendous. And then it's got this kind of squiggly, sinuous tail that goes across a lot of the planet. And this was actually discovered a couple weeks ago by amateur astronomers. And the Cassini probe, actually snapped some pictures of it as well, and they're just absolutely beautiful. One of the other cool things about these pictures is that you can't see the rings because Cassini took the picture from pretty much straight on in the same plane as the rings, but you can see the shadow of the rings.
Oh, cool.
And so it's just really interesting. Like there's this curve on the bottom of Saturn, it's the shadow from the rings, but you can't actually see the rings very well.
So this photograph's up on geekspeak.org?
This photograph will be up on geekspeak.org.
Soon will be. Of course, it's a new year, so I've got to do a couple changes to the website to make it actually function for this year. But it'll be up soon.
Sometime.
All right. Thank you very much for that.
Yeah.
All right. So we covered local news. Then we covered city government. Then we covered France. We got to Europe. He just covered Saturn. Can you cover something larger than that, Miles?
The constant pi.
A constant.
Yes. Is something
that
we're all
That's
familiar with.
Right?
The ratio of the diameter to the circumference.
Mm-hmm.
There is a manifesto out called the Tau Manifesto. Recommended reading if you are even slightly math inclined, where it talks about pi is wrong. I don't mean pi being wrong in that if you use pi, you'll get the wrong answer. That's not it. It's more of the conceptual model. Think of how hard it would have been for ancient Rome to do advanced mathematics. Because they were using Roman numerals. Like, imagine trying to do basic multiplication Roman numerals.
Try to figure out the area of a square with Roman numerals.
Right.
Write pi in Roman numerals.
Which they did.
Sure.
They
would drive me crazy.
The ancient Greeks knew about pi.
But then again,
pi.
If I were to try to figure out the area of a circle or, you know, the volume of a sphere and I was using binary, it'd still be really hard. I mean, it's really pretty much hard any system that you're not familiar with.
Right. So what this thing is talking about, and it's a lot of it is still tongue-in-cheek. No one's really pushing to have all the textbooks changed and having to deal with yet another Greek letter, or rather a repurposing of a Greek letter. But it's that idea of if you're using, for example, sine and cosine, and you have that waveform.
Mm-hmm.
For the waveform to complete or have that unit circle complete, if you have a unit circle, what is 360 degrees going around the entire unit circle?
Mm-hmm.
It's 2 pi.
Yeah.
Why isn't it just a single character, tau?
Okay.
Half the circle is 1/2 tau, and a quarter of the circle is 1/4 tau, as opposed to pi or half a quarter of a circle being half pi.
Oh, I see.
Half a circle being pi.
So the actual the value of
tau is is exactly 2π. They are equivalent.
You have to have one constant concept that you're going to use. Right. And the ratio is the right one to use, isn't it? I mean, if you say that we're going to use in the... What would be the solution to this? What are they suggesting is the right way to look at it?
Well, instead of saying 2πr, mm-hmm. you know, or that type of thing, yes. You would use tau r.
Gotcha.
Instead of saying, like I said, the unit circle, instead of saying the whole 360 degrees would be equal to 2π, you just say 360 degrees is equal to 1 tau.
Guys, did I show you my the cookie that Maggie and I made the other day?
Oh my gosh. And the cookie, actually it's a series of cookies.
It's a whole bunch of cookies.
That are 3.141592.
We got some numerical cookie cutters for
you didn't
the
stop
holidays.
There, did you?
No, I'm still baking. Anyway, I mean, I'll put it up on the website. Basically, pi to the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 sixth digit in cookie.
But the overall idea is that it would make trigonometry easier.
Yeah, it would make trigonometry a lot easier. All right, thank you.
Are any of the numbers tastier than the others?
Let me ask you something. In mathematics, you guys, what was the most complicated and hardest thing for you to...
For us to get?
Was it geometry? Was it calculus? Was it trigonometry?
Not calculus.
It was trigonometry.
I just regularly made algebra mistakes. And that really annoyed me when I was doing calculus. Because calculus, for me at least, seemed really easy. The concepts seemed really easy.
I agree. Calculus was wonderful.
I just... Oh, my God.
Kept on making algebra problems.
Linear algebra was really hard when we got to, I think, about two-thirds of the way through the intro textbook, and we got to matrices.
That stuff was no problem for me.
I was really interested in matrix transformations, right? That seemed really cool, but all the other stuff,
It's funny, for me, it was always trig, and then I go into electronics, and of course, you really have to know your trigonometry to deal with electronics, because you're dealing with phase and version electronics.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but also a public service announcement out there, especially because I look at many college curriculums, for example, psychology or the like, that require a certain amount of math. They require trig.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it always seemed to me so odd that they would require trig, because they wanted them to have certain math ability, because no one ever really acts as a cheerleader for math and say trig is the hump. Once you get past trig, the first one, maybe two semesters of calculus are easier. Once you get past that hump, you're coasting for a while, and you get...
So you might as well have your barrier set a little further, because you're going to get past...
Well, that, and I was also thinking, if you have an equation that talks about a population, you know, you're talking about a bell curve or whatever, isn't it very interesting to know where the curve changes, you know, that second derivative, mm-hmm. where the hump is, where the multiple humps are, that type of thing. It seems so much more useful to me for a psychologist to know basic calculus than to know trig.
I agree.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think trig really matters when you're dealing with electronics, though. Let me tell you, biasing a transistor.
Yes,
about
it does. And construction.
Hard. Yeah. And we, you know, I feel like we just lost half our audience talking about math for too long. So let me assure you, we won't be doing that.
What
entire
are you
show.
Talking about? Math is the language of the universe.
It's elegance.
The geek bit of the day will be delivered by.
See,
Miles,
I'm still going to be on my soapbox here about math.
Miles will talk about math in just a second. It's the geek bit of the day. The geeks today are Miles, Elam, Ben, Jaffe. I'm Lyle Troxell. It's the 1st of January, folks. That means it's the new year. And with this new year, last year at the last show, I suggested that we do a little bit of New Year's resolution. So we'll be doing that in a minute. And maybe Miles is just to teach more math to people. I don't know. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. We are taking calls with questions and comments about technology. The phone number is 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. You can call right now because we're on air right now. For another half an hour, that is. Again, the number is 1-800-655-5877. New Year's resolutions, folks.
To teach them every week, teach at least one person something about math, and if I can't find that one person, I teach myself something new about it.
Wow, that's good. Are you going to document it?
Oh.
How do you know?
Sure.
It's only 52 things. That's pretty good. All right, I like that. Ben?
That's a really good one. I'll just steal Miles's.
Wow.
I haven't thought about this, actually.
Okay.
Maybe my New Year's resolution should be...
Oh, you weren't here last week.
I need to come up with a New Year's resolution for 2012.
Do you know what your New Year's resolution was last year?
No, but wasn't it recursive?
It was recursive.
What was it?
It was to not have New Year's resolutions.
Oh, yes.
Or not to follow your New Year's resolution.
That's not recursive. That's paradoxical.
It is. Well, I think
it would be recursive if you tried to evaluate it. It could be coded in such a way that it would be recursive, I think, right?
It wasn't recursive. It actually said logic, Boolean logic fail was the underlying tag.
Yeah.
I've got a couple of them. One is I'm going to take a portrait every day of a new person for the entire year. That is going to be really, really hard. Luckily, you brought your brothers here, which I won't see, so I'm going to snag one of them, if you don't mind, guys.
Portraits? Can you take, like, five portraits?
No. Every day, I have to take a photograph of a new person.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So no more 20 billion photos of me?
No. I think I only have 1,000 pictures of you, Miles. 2,500, maybe.
Any allowances for, like, camera getting lost?
No, I'll have my iPhone. I'll always have another camera. It should be fine. I should be able to do it. It's going to be really hard to make sure to do it every day. And there'll be some days where I'm staying at home. What do you do that day? You know, I'll run outside and wait for someone to pass in a car.
Just don't take yourself out.
Nice. So, and for backup, I'm going to take a self-portrait every day, too. So at least I'll succeed in that one because I can normally find me.
Yeah, that's true.
The other one, but the Geek Speak resolution is this, to ask more stupid questions. Now, I know this seems like a pretty ridiculous thing, but lots of times we'll get in a conversation about, I don't know, calculus and trigonometry, and I'll be follow along fine, and I'm not doing my role. My role is to inform, right, to help the audience listen to what you guys are talking about. So I really need to be asking things like, Miles, what actually is trigonometry? But it's a hard thing to do because I feel like I should know that. I should be geeky enough, but I'm going to do more of that this year. That's my resolution. Yeah. Miles, what's trigonometry?
Ooh,
I know it's really a hard question.
Examination
actually.
Of the unit circle.
Good.
I
like that.
Or, I mean, it's math through circles. And circles and triangles.
Yeah, okay.
You feel like you're going in circles studying it.
Why don't we look that up on Wikipedia to get the real deal? Because I can't clarify more than that. But I think that's
We don't talk about this enough, or at least in society we don't talk about it, because we hear so often people saying, I hate math, or I'm not good at math. And it's exceedingly frustrating to me to hear that statement in much the same way as it would be frustrating for someone to hear someone say, well, you know, I studied how to be literate, and I studied like my ABCs, and I'm really good at my ABCs, and I did that over and over again. But every time I have to write an essay, I completely fall. I mean, like, that's just way out of it. I just, like, stay with some simple words, and that's what I can do really well. So I can write the word Sam, write the name Sam really fast. And that's what it sounds like when people say to me, oh, algebra is kind of hard, and I don't really, you know, I'm really bad at math. I don't do anything beyond that. And it's something that you do need to practice at, and it's something that is absolutely worthwhile, and that's why I was saying, why are we pushing people back to say, like, just go up to trig and have that pain point and not go to calculus? For me, having that class was understanding when people said math is the language of the universe, and then seeing, I mean, that was the class that opened my eyes and went, everything is a precursor to that point where you no longer are learning the alphabet and practicing, you know, the different bits of grammar and learning this is a subject and this is a verb, because that is tedious. That is hard. And you're getting to the point where you're actually able to express your thoughts, express the world as an equation, as a way to distill it down to logic and a sequence. And that is the thing that I think needs to have more cheerleaders, that we need to have more people say, like, yes, I'm going to help you out with that math. I'm going to bring you a little bit forward so that we all can speak that same language.
All right. Thanks, Miles. I like that.
I feel like we should have people to applaud that. Yeah. No, I have one, too.
All right.
I just thought of it. But I think it's a very good one. I think mine will be to ask more questions. And I always
that was mine.
What?
I just did that.
No.
So you're not going to ask stupid questions either?
No, I'm going to ask. I'm going to ask more intelligent questions.
And today we discuss with Ben the concept of plagiarism.
What's Well, okay. So I guess I mean in every aspect of my life. I think that it becomes very easy to think, oh, I already know enough about this topic or about that topic or something like that. Not necessarily in a hosting role, as you were talking about, Lau, but just, you know, I mean, I've been doing a lot of web design recently, and I've just, it's amazing how the learning curve never, ever, ever ends. There's always another technology or another technologies.
Curve. <I'm sorry>.
Okay, curves can end. We're Prove talking that. About trigonometry.
All right. Are you taking on contracts for web development?
Yeah.
I've got one. Oh, great. I'll hook it up with you later.
Fantastic.
We have had I just was recalling a book, a really good book called The Unknown Quantity, A Real and Imaginary History of Algebra. It was a GeekSpeak show we did on October 7th, 2006, with John Derbyshire. And listen to the podcast if you'd like. The MP3s are up there. At geekspeak.org for October 7th, 2006. So it was kind of an older show, but it's kind of a history of algebra and mathematics, and it's really fascinating. I got to say that if you want to do a New Year's resolution for yourself and you're not a mathematics professor, then go ahead and grab this book or another book of this sort, which kind of explores mathematics in a new way, and you'll have another higher level of appreciation for this thing that we normally dismiss as hard. All right, let's move on to something else, shall we?
I do actually have a geek bit.
All right, go ahead.
And it might fall under the category of too little too late, but it is a cocktail mixer, of course, coming right after the New Year's, but it's an iPhone application. I haven't tried it myself, but I've heard good reviews, and I'll put the link up online. And the good thing about this one is it asks you what you have, and then it prepares drink recipes for you based on what you have. I also have a request. If any of our listeners know, Top Shelf.
Top Shelf.
And if anyone knows of any apps that do this for like grocery shopping lists, for example, where, you know,
recipes?
Yeah, recipes. It'll give you a recipe based on what you have in your cabinet. And ideally, it integrates with another app that lets
you
do,
buy stuff.
Yeah, lets you figure out what, like, make shopping lists and things
so
like that.
So what you want... Ben, explain to me. What you want is you want to have an inventory of everything that's in your kitchen in your phone.
Yes, and I want to make
then
it easy
you want
to import
to say,
receipts.
Show me the different things you can actually show me the different things that I can make right now.
Yeah, and based on difficulty level, based on
you know
cost,
what will
perhaps.
Happen if you use an app like this, you start buying simpler and simpler groceries.
Like, or maybe just
I only
more
have 15
more.
Ingredients and I can make 37,000 things. Isn't that,
that
cool?
That means I can just have 4 ingredients. And well, then I'll end up eating a lot of BB&Js.
You'll just be buying.
And it has to be an Android app or an app for OS X.
Wow, you're so
demanding. Or a web app. It could be a web app, just not an iPhone app.
Let's
I'm
take a
tired
call,
of
shall we? From Santa Cruz, Bradley, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Hey, man.
What's your question today or comment?
I was thinking about that pie.
Pie versus tau?
Yeah. If a circle is thought of as kind of a square, then it's actually a diameter times pi, which would give the area. And so you don't need to worry about
not the area.
Pardon me?
The circumference, not the area.
Oh, sorry. Thanks. Yeah. I enjoy math, but I'm not good at it. but anyway, that's my point. If you think of it as the diameter instead of the radius being doubled, then pi becomes the constant and can be used quite easily.
Yes, and many textbooks have the diameter in textbooks when they're saying do pi times that diameter.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, when you go to multiple dimensions,
mm-hmm.
you're doing it on the basis of radius. So, for example, pi r squared, that's the big elephant in the room, pi r squared. Like, how do you convert that one to tau? It would be, you know, 1/2 tau.
You're talking about the volume to figure out the area of the circle is pi r squared. Is that right?
Right.
So for doing that as a diameter, it doesn't really work. So you have to write in value.
So for one dimensional, which is circumference, that's and then you go two dimensional, diameter doesn't work anymore. You're really working with radius. And as you go to three dimensions, a sphere, 4/3 pi r cubed, it doesn't matter what your constant is. You have a fraction.
Again, though, the multiple is the radius. And not the pi, so the pi remains constant.
Oh, that's true. I guess you could just say
pi is
2/3 diameter.
Yeah. Anyway, that was just a thought.
Thank you so much for that.
Cool. Take it easy, guys.
Take care. Happy New Year.
You too, guys.
Yeah. Oh, actually, I correct myself. No, it wouldn't. Like 4/3 pi r cubed. Once you start having like the radius is being cubed, you can't just do a divisor of divide by 2 somewhere.
Right.
Like you actually do need to have the radius as mm-hmm. an important item. I didn't talk about in the.
You know, I want to clarify something. I don't exactly understand what the news story is saying.
It's not a news story. It's called the Tau Manifesto.
Idea that we should be using Tau instead of pi as our constant that represents this issue of the ratio between the radius and the circumference, which is basically what you're talking about. This if you look at a sine wave, when the sine wave repeats compared to its frequency, I mean, mm-hmm. that is what it repeating is. But you see what I'm saying? I don't exactly understand. So can we – send me that article. I'm going to read that article so I understand it.
Sine 2 pi is equal to 1.
Right.
And cosine 2 pi is negative
1. You're basically talking about changing that structure?
Or, sorry, sine is 0 and cosine
is negative 1. Talking about changing
1.
That structure?
Changing it so that it, instead of being a 2 pi, it just becomes a 1 tau. There are actually many things in physics where you end up with a 2 times or a multiple of 2 mm-hmm. multiplier of pi in there. In fact,
so you're just saying, why are we using pi as the base when we should use something else?
Right.
But if it's divisible perfectly by 2, wouldn't...
Right. I prefaced the whole thing saying it's kind of tongue-in-cheek and no one really is looking to change all of the textbooks for this. It's more along the lines of, wouldn't it make it easier to conceptualize, especially for people starting off with trigonometry?
Right.
To be able to say, like, oh, a circle is tau. And then, I mean...
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Miles, by the way,
for all
of the clarification on this, because I've been asking myself those questions when I was taking calculus in high school, and I never got any answers. And
like, why do we use these constants?
Yeah, like why 2 pi? Why is 2 pi 360 degrees when you convert to radians? And why don't we just say, instead of 2 pi r, why don't we say dr, you know, to figure out circumference?
Or pi d.
Pi D.
Which many people do. Many people do refer to it as...
Yeah, but like the multidimensional thing, that makes a lot more sense. So thank you.
Yeah, very cool, Ben. Miles, thank you so much. From Big Sur, Jim, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Nice to be talking to you on New Year's Day. So here's the deal. I do a lot of photography, and I'm thinking about stitching together like 8x10... film, which I estimate would, one of the 8x10s would be maybe 850 megabytes. So I might be processing upwards of 1,000, 2,000 megabytes. And I'm thinking of switching from an iMac to a quad core or 8 core. And here's my question.
Mm-hmm.
You have all these specs listed, 3 gigabyte interface, mm-hmm. 3 gigabytes per second. You got quad-core Intel Xeon Westmere processors, 6 gigabyte memory. You got double layer, super drive, Radeon HD 5770.
Okay, what's your question?
Which of these are necessary? What part of these aspects of these computers are used and necessary to do the heavy lifting, the serious processing of these big files?
Well, first off, I would just say that any modern computer you get will be able to handle pretty much anything you throw at it, unless you're doing some like really intense, I don't know, scientific modeling or something like that.
What I'm doing is like
video editing,
processing digital files in Lightroom and CS5.
Yeah.
Photoshop.
In direct answer to your question, which parts are necessary? They're all necessary. I mean, you need all those pieces.
Mm-hmm.
The hard drive is necessary to hold the data in the first place.
And the speeds of the hard drive, the read-write speed of the hard drive is important for that.
Right.
But the read-write, is that the per-second interface?
Yes.
Right. But the answer that you're looking for in terms of efficient processing of it and what's doing the quote, heavy lifting, I would say is the RAM.
Mm-hmm.
Because the CPU is going to determine how fast it gets done, but unless you can hold it all in RAM, you're going back to a hard drive for swapping.
Yeah,
and
an issue is that any of these computers that you buy right now, even your iMac, I'm assuming it's not the first version, but a more current Intel iMac, the processor is not going to be your bottleneck on any of these things, because the Photoshop stuff and the Lightroom stuff you'll be doing to the image is just not that complicated for
Intel
for the
Core
processor.
2 processors from 6 years ago are still fine. Fast.
Right. So really it's about picking the data up, doing something with it, and putting it back down. And that's all about interface speed. So how fast you can get data from your hard drive to your RAM, how much of the photo you can actually store in RAM before you have to access the hard drive again, because that's going to be slower, and then to do your transition. So basically, you know, you want to get 4 gigs of RAM, and you want to...
No, he has 6 gigs of RAM.
You're
so
fine.
You're already...
Yeah, you're fine.
You're handling that. You can handle the entire data set in memory, and that has you covered.
Right. Okay. Now, this 3 gigabytes per second interface, you know, the external drives... Oh, shoot.
Oh, you're talking about SATA.
The black...
When something says SATA as a 3 gigabyte per second interface, that's how fast, theoretically, the bus speed can go. That is not how fast your hard drive is going.
That's right.
Yeah. Right. And you can get 6 gigabytes per second on some of these external drives.
Yes.
So do I want to wait and see if Apple's going to come out with a 6 gigabyte per second 8-core?
No. The only reason why you would ever need to worry about this is if you had a large array of solid-state drives.
Okay.
All working on the same bus.
Yeah.
That's or if you had something that was this exotic RAM on a card, which is available, but they're just very expensive.
Just imagine the hard drive. Imagine your hard drive kind of is like a carport at an airport, you know, like a car garage at an airport. Tons of cars in there, right?
Right.
And the bus speed is how fast you can get those things in and out.
Uh-huh.
In this situation, you have a 7-lane freeway going to the car garage.
Okay.
Right? So there's that's not going to slow anything down.
Okay.
The actual access of the hard drive, getting the data from one floor to the next floor, is going to be your speed issue. And then once it's on that bus, you've got it. You don't have any problems with it.
Okay.
So
The
next thing is external drives very commonly can be faster hard drive access speeds than your local hard drive, because if you do a RAID configuration on an external device, like a Drobo box, right, that has like 6 drives in it, and then you're using a FireRAID 800 line, you can actually saturate that 800 line if you've got enough hard drives in that array. But you're not going to have that kind of level of equipment. It's too expensive.
We're talking about an SATA, and in this case, like eSATA would be the equivalent for an external. And you're talking about, you would need, assuming that a good solid state drive is giving, I'll throw out a number, 300 megabytes a second in transfer speed, then how many of those drives do you need to be able to saturate 6 gigabytes or 3 gigabytes, just like as a baseline? It means you need 10 of them in a RAID running at full speed to saturate that bus, the theoretical bus.
Right. Okay.
You'd have other issues.
Yeah,
I'll
be using less than that for sure.
Yeah, if you're nowhere near that, it's not an issue.
Right.
It won't be for quite a while.
Thank you so much for the call, Jim.
Thanks a lot.
Take care.
Okay, bye.
So if you'd like to call on this New Year's show, please do so. The phone numbers are 800. The phone number is 800-655-5877. Again, that's toll-free, 1-800-655-5877. Mr. Jaffe.
One quick observation that I hadn't thought of before. We've gone from talking about what thing is going to do the heavy lifting, what's going to be working the hardest, to what is going to be slowing it down, what's going to be the bottleneck, you know, instead of talking about, our processor just isn't fast enough to do this. That's not a problem anymore. Now we're talking about, of all of the components, which one is going to be the one that slows it down. The hard drives, it's not
been the case. Right.
Well, I guess so in some sense, but it's just interesting to see that it's not, it's the hard drive access speed is really the thing that slows everything down the most.
Yeah,
well,
relative
and when we talk about get more RAM, the reason why we're saying that is so you don't use your hard drive as much. Like it's really, it's a correlation back to that slow point.
Right, hard drives, back in the days of like the original PC or something like that, were slower than how processors and RAM could handle stuff. But the gulf has widened dramatically.
Right. Yeah, right.
Where it used to be, it's a lot slower. It's like, 10 times slower or even 100 times slower. And now, quite honestly, I mean, this isn't even hyperbole, RAM can be a million times faster
than a hard drive.
Wow.
Yeah, it's spinning platter. It's like turning around in your office chair and picking up a Coke bottle or something versus going downstairs, going down the elevator, walking a mile, getting a Coke from a vending machine, walking back. You know, it's like that's the gulf now.
Right. Okay, great analogy.
So yeah, so any way you can avoid talking to the hard drive, which is, you know, adding more RAM or getting a solid state drive, or even a solid state drive is still closer to the speed of a hard drive than RAM.
Miles,
but yeah.
Tell us about hackers and mobile phones.
Oh, well, here's some great news to ring in the new year. GSM. This is the standard used for phones all around the world, including in the U.S. If you have an AT&T or a T-Mobile phone, you're using GSM. Some researchers have demonstrated an exploit that allows them to eavesdrop on the GSM encryption protocol.
Oh, no. That's not good at all.
That is not good at all.
Is this theoretical or is this in practice?
No, they have an exploit
it.
They have not published it. They aren't black hats like just trying to sell it to the highest bidder. They found it. They found the error. They're telling the folks in charge, like, this error is here.
But it's a protocol design error, I'm assuming. Or is it just a flaw in the way it was implemented?
Well, any type of encryption. There's no such thing as a perfect encryption.
Right.
Encryption is also in a sense of like how hard is the math in order to solve this.
So what we're talking about right now, if I make a phone call to Ben while my phone is talking to the AT&T tower, that protocol right there, all that data is being encrypted. If you listen in, you see connection.
Right, it's over the air though. It's a wireless. Okay, yeah. There's these radio signals going over.
And if you look at it and try to investigate it, you can figure out some things like my ID, my phone's ID, the tower's ID. But everything else should be in this kind of package of things that are encrypted that you can't access.
Right.
What you're saying is these researchers figured out a way to access it.
Yes.
So theoretically, you could listen in on anybody's calls.
Yes.
And of course, the calls and the data. So location data, anything else that's going on your phone. It's a pretty serious breach. Thanks. Right. Any like good news about that? Well, they haven't told anybody how to do it yet.
Right. So far, no black hats have been using it that we're aware of.
What does black hat mean?
Someone who is using this maliciously, using it to...
As in would wear a black hat in a cowboy movie because it's a bad guy.
Exactly.
Okay. White hat hacker is someone who goes, hey, everybody, there's a problem here, but we can fix it before anybody knows how to deal with it.
Right.
The good guy.
That's kind of what these folks are taking on that role of white hat, just letting notes out there, but they're not releasing the code as a proof of concept. They're actually holding on to it and trying to work with the vendors. But there has not been a response from the folks that manage GSM, all the telecoms.
I think the response from them is, because it's a serious problem. Because if it's an encryption protocol, all the devices need to be updated, which means all the phones. And there's a few of them, I hear.
Yes. Although people have been warning about this for quite some time, and there's been no
the
movement
probability.
On it. Yeah.
Okay. So this idea has been around for a while. They just finally actually executed an exploit
many years.
I mean, they transformed the possibility into reality.
Yeah, hypothetical became reality.
Oh man. Okay. So speaking code on your phone. All right. Thank you.
Just speak Pig Latin. You'll be fine.
Okay. What a cool project that would be to actually get this code and get it working and have just start. Rebroadcasting people's phone calls. Do you remember Didi did this for her grad program? Do you remember this?
No, I don't.
Okay. So Didi Hubbard, who used to one of the geeks for years back, was on the show for 2 years. Her graduate program, one of the graduate programs, was a printer that hung out in a coffee shop and also a plant that hung out, an electronic plant. And whenever it saw passwords being sent in the clear over the Wi-Fi, it would print them out, print out the password. And I think something actually said the password out loud as well. So you're typing along, you're hanging out in a cafe, and all of a sudden your password says out loud, and you're like, just to clarify that, the protocols you're using on a Wi-Fi network are not encrypted by default. You better be doing it encrypted. So it's to bring awareness to people, because half the time they don't know. It's a really cool idea. And the plant would wither and die depending on how healthy the network was. So if all the traffic was secure, the plant was all happy. And as the traffic got insecure, the plant would start to be sad.
That is wonderful. Is there any documentation on this?
Quirius.com, which I think you can get to DDs from geekspeak.org. I'll hook you up, Miles. But she's got
I was thinking for our listeners as well, because if I'm finding that interesting,
I'll find
sure a
link
a lot
and
of other people
to the
are
show
as well.
Page, no problem. CB from Capitola, welcome to Geekspeak.
Yeah, hello.
You just got started talking about the very things I was wondering about, but what I especially also wanted to wonder about is downloading applications, how safe it is, because I recently got an Android phone after trying to decide between a netbook and a phone.
Mm-hmm.
I was very unhappy with Vista and what I heard of Windows 7 Starter. So, I really didn't want to go in that direction.
Did you get your Android phone?
Yes, and now actually I've had two of them because the first one kept crashing, but it would read web pages and you could type in passwords.
Well, Ben, how safe is it for her to download apps on her Android phone? What kind of things does she need to be careful about?
Well, actually, there's a story that I was thinking about covering later on, but the we're running out of time, about an Android Trojan, which is a virus, but that's not spreading through the official app market. So basically, the answer is, if you have an iPhone, if you have an Android device, if you install applications from the application market, right, on the iPhone, you don't really have a choice but to do that. But on the Android, that's the default. As long as you don't go into your settings and check the little box that says allow unauthorized applications on my device, you're going to probably be just totally fine.
Are those applications reviewed by somebody?
Google's a lot more open in their policies as far as what gets accepted into the app market. Apple's a lot more
closed. You can go ahead and safely download apps on your phone. The protocol, the thing that we're talking about the GSM network being kind of hackable and everything, is not actually in the wild yet. It's a theoretical problem, but it's not something you've got to worry about at this moment. Just keep listening to GeekSpeak. We'll tell you when we should.
Yeah, and the second question related to that, if I can real quick. Now, on the second phone, I cannot type anything into any websites, and they said, oh, it's my service.
But you have two phones and one phone doesn't do it?
No, well, I had to return the first phone because it kept crashing.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I'd have to take a peek at what you're doing. Where are you buying the phone from?
From Best Buy, and it's a Virgin.
You know what? Go into Best Buy if you can and bring the phone with you. And
yes,
this
and
is
they
the
said, oh, it's because you have a prepaid phone rather than...
Oh, okay. So it's possible that... Yeah, I'm not sure what the problem is.
I don't buy that because the first phone, you could actually see the whole web page, and you didn't get these sort of shortened versions of the web page.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're running out of time. I can't really help you out online without looking at the phone and see what's happening. Sorry about that. I would suggest I know you already did Best Buy. I hate to say go on service provider and start contacting, but go into one of the stores that actually sells your service and talk to them, and hopefully they'll be able to help you out. CB, thank you so much. And we weren't able to get to a couple calls. Sorry about that. Today on GeekSpeak was Miles Elam. Thank you, Miles, for being here.
Good morning.
And you just
and
say
always a pleasure to be here.
And Miles, in a few minutes, in like 11 minutes from now, what's going to happen?
It's going the date and time, the timestamp for the world is, or for Pacific time anyway, is going to be 1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1, which is 11:11 and 11 seconds on January 1st, 2011.
In just 11 minutes from now or so. This is GeekSpeak. This is Central Coast Public Radio KOSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at KOSP.org. The other geek today was Ben Jaffe. Thank you, Ben, for being here.
Yeah, take care.
GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence, and we appreciate the Puppet Master for letting us use the show title. For KOSP and for GeekSpeak, I'm Lyle Troxell. Happy New Year, everyone. We'll see you next week.